Log Talk Radio.
Once again, it is Wednesday night, and we're here at Life and Leadership Conference with the coach herself, Morale, Coach Morale, a.k.a. Reverend Morale P. Brown, and we have a special, special show for you today. We have Sharon Nielsen, Director of Woodland Academy, special topic, things that make you go, All right. Let's bring in the host with the most, the coach who understands life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, Coach Morale. Give a nice hand. Come on, people. Wake up.
Wow, Dr. Ron, thank you so much just for that great welcome. I'm excited about tonight because not only is it Wednesday, look, May 26, 2021, but from what I understand, it's hump day and it's your birthday.
Thank
so
you so
everybody,
much.
Yes. This is so great because I've known you for about 4 to almost 6 months. And I can imagine the lives that you've impacted for those that you've known for 6 months to a year to 20 years. My life has been so impacted by you, and I am sure I'm speaking for anyone that's at Neo Nation or at your consulting business where you are. Thank you for just being who you are and being a servant to humanity. Everybody give him a clap one more time.
Go ahead, y'all. Now, wake up. Wake up. You're here with Coach Morales. Well, I want to say to you, I thank you. I thank you so much. I appreciate that. You know,
you're welcome. My pleasure.
It brings joy to my heart and tears to my eyes. You know, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Little Melancholy, I have a friend, my best friend. We've been friends since 5 years old. Give a little shout out to Robert Figueroa.
Uh-huh.
Anybody can be my friend for all those years.
Yes.
Robert Figueroa, he called me. I haven't heard from him in a while. And when you get a certain
uh-huh.
age, you get concerned about your friends because, you know, things happening. And he let me know he's
right.
still kicking. He still sounds like the day I met him. And he's in karate tournaments. And going, he's traveling over to China and Asia and different places. And he's doing his
right.
thing. He broke his hip. He had a hip replacement. And he's back on
uh-huh.
foot. He's my brother, beloved. And, you know, it just warmed my heart. I tell you, we started talking about old times, old days and whatnot.
Right.
And my mom is not here, but my mom was a mom to him. And we
right.
talked about those things.
Okay.
His mother's not here as well his father and my father. You know, we talked about that. And my mother has
yes.
a younger sister who's still here and who was like an aunt to him. And we called her
yes.
and we just had a ball. And it was just a joy. It was a joy.
That's great. Wow. So what
yes.
you're basically saying is you can actually enjoy your birthday by being among people. And it's not always where you are necessarily having a birthday cake and someone singing happy birthday or at a bar or something like that, but you can just enjoy people from the past and their presence and just remembering what it's like to have great social connections. And that's one of the things you're going
True.
To be talking about tonight, Dr. Ron. In terms of maximizing your life, I look at when I did my studies a couple of years ago in terms of optimization in life, that optimization is to make the most out of, meaning you have a lack of, let's say when you're talking about the wheel of life, in your relationship, that perhaps you have more toxic relationships where more people are taking from you than putting back in you, or you in an environment, as we talked about last week, where Greg Hall was at a place or an apartment where there wasn't really heat and hot water and a great living condition. And when you're talking about optimization, it's how can people make the most. But then what I realized was that more important as I look at the information from the World Health Organization, I went to, okay, who defines happiness? Who defines what is prosperity? What is well-being? And when I went to the World Health Organization, and you look at life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness based on our Declaration of Independence, I stem, and everything that I do or create, it stems out of that in order for every individual that is born in this world, no matter where they're from, out of the 7 continent, in order to not just optimize, but you want to what we call maximize in life, which really means you are thriving. And that's what well-being is about. And when I think of the scriptures, John 10:10, God said that He came that we may have life and have life to its abundance, life to the fullness. And in order to do that, we need that social connection. But even with the social connection and relationships, there is a caveat in that no man is an island. And yet at the same time, how do we navigate relationships? how do we look at the strategies that when there's a breakdown in relationship or a breakdown in your economics or a breakdown it with your life balance and things get so topsy-turvy like it has for 2020 and 2021, where we are now doing what we can to recover. And just to back up a little bit, if you want to just take a journey backwards, and I know a lot of people are so glad that 2020 is over. They don't want to see it again. Some people don't even want to write about it. Some people don't want to sing about it. And some people definitely don't want to shout about it. But let's just take a quick look. When you think of how in December 2019, you're looking on the news, CNN, ABC, and all the different news network and the newspapers, and you're hearing about this pandemic in China, this outburst. You never thought it was going to come to the United States. Then all of a sudden, for me, March the 11th, on a Friday, they're saying, hey, CMS school is going to be closed for 2 weeks. And Monday, the 13th of March, they said, hey, guess what? It's closed for 3 weeks or indefinitely. And everybody's life changed. The economic industry changed, entertainment, our every system and sports, the arenas were closed, the movie theaters were closed, students were staying at home and learning remotely. And this brought really, as my friend Sharon, who's going to be on later tonight, we talked about, it just brought like a worldwide, so to speak, depression. And a depression is when you are the opposite of being elated. It's almost like a balloon, and you blow that balloon up and you put all of that air in it. And I'll just say respiration. You're putting the air, you're putting your breath into that balloon, and it gets as big as it can. And then all of a sudden someone just takes a stick pin and just busts that balloon. Deflated, and people became depressed where they were isolated for 3 to 6 months, almost an entire year's. Elderly couldn't see their loved ones except maybe through a window or from a telephone. All those things just took us into a state of isolation, and we know that isolation tends to bring depression because we, as challenging as relationships can be, we also thrive from relationship, right? And so when I'm thinking of five strategies to deal with the breakdown so that now we can, in a sense, inspiration for life back into us, put the inspiration and breathe the inspiration of life back into us, that we want to first love ourselves, learn to be where we are, be still, and learn the lesson of 2019-2020, that it is important to be self-actualized in the areas of your career, finance, fun and leisure, family, physical, emotional, health, education, spirituality, life balance, your friends, and all your relationships, and definitely your physical environment. There were so many people going out to buy new furniture for their apartment or their house. And there were others who were doing a garden with gardening and just making sure that their environment was in a peaceful atmosphere so that they can think. And husbands and wives were, I mean, their relationship was so stretched. But so there was a breakdown. There was a breakdown with elderly abuse, a breakdown with child abuse, a breakdown. Physical abuse was on a high, anxiety and depression. And yet at the same time, for those who were able to understand that when a breakdown comes, that it's a catalyst for a breakthrough. You hear me, doctor? You see, hear me, audience?
Yes.
That the moment that we went through 2019 with a breakdown, but that was a flip in God's eyesight for a breakthrough. I'm here to let you know tonight that we're going to look in just briefly. We're going to look into one of the most severe or serious type of breakdown or break, you know, where you just can't take it anymore. And this particular term people used to call it years ago, an extreme mental or emotional stress. And I believe that a lot of us went through an emotional, excessive. Stress is natural. There's good stress, there's bad stress. But when it's undue stress and it lasts for about 3 weeks, then it becomes very serious. And to a point where you get so depressed or fill of anxiety or tension that you cannot perform your normal activities. There are some people who are just getting their breath again, just getting their inspiration again, just feeling the air of life that now you can live in your environment at home, and then you can get back out into the community, and then you can go on your vacation, or you can go visit your relatives in a safe way, and they're now saying it's time to live again, that now they're going to realize it's time to embrace the breakthrough. It's time now to become what they were meant to be. And unfortunately, the pandemic woke us up, a lot of us. We're now becoming resuscitated. We're getting our air back. We're rejuvenated. It's time to go. It's time to say, what is my purpose in life? And how do I go from this nervous breakdown, this mental disorder, the inactivity, to now saying, I want to remember my vocation. I want to remember what is my purpose in life. I want to remember my goals that I set out before 2020. And you want to now say, it's time to get up. Usually a mental breakdown or nervousness comes from a sudden tragedy. For us, it came from a sudden pandemic or a major life change, such as losing a mother or a father or a sister or a brother. It can come from stress at work when you are totally burned out and you are expecting to give more and more each day with no reward and no breaks. Your body begins to shut itself down. And I said earlier, it could be anxiety, depression, poor sleep habit. I like to look at life holistically, the physical, the mental, the emotional, the psychological, the vocational, the holistic life, your culture, political, in that when you want to be the leader, the CEO, you want to be first the CEO of your body. You want to make sure that you are walking, and I don't want to get ahead of myself, into mindfulness. So you want to get enough sleep. Some people who have served in any branches of the armed services, 4 hours is good for them. Give me 8 or 9 hours and I'm good to go. Make sure that I'm eating good and diet and healthy. When I go away, I can only deal with the restaurants no more than like 3 days, because for the most part, I'm cooking at home and I'm trying to whip up something that's healthy. And so you want to look at what do you need in your body? What would push you into a depression, or what would push you into anxiety? Or your friends may be going out monthly, weekly. They may be going on vacations to exotic places like Aruba, Bahamas, and so on. That. But if that's going to leave you in financial ruin, you have to say, do I go with the crowd? Is that going to leave me nervous where I cannot no longer pay my bills? You have to ask yourself those questions. And some of the signs of a person that's having a nervous breakdown or having a mental breakdown, or they have an undue stress where they are not walking in the energy, they're not walking in the inspiration in which they were called, you'll see that they become fearful. They become nervous. They become irritable. It's very challenging to be around someone who wants to save the entire world, but they're losing their own life, or they're losing their own mental peace, because they're trying to save the world, but they're losing their own self. They're not eating properly. They're not sleeping properly. They're trying to take over too much, and they're not balancing their life. They get angry easily, and it's difficult for you to even to be around them. And I want tonight to be a time that teachers, preachers, life coaches, counselors, lay people, parents, children, please take stock. Where are you on that spectrum? Where are you on the spectrum? Are you feeling helpless? Are you feeling like your life is not worth living? Are you having heart palpitation? Were you having difficulties breathing? Well, what I would like to do tonight, and my audience know, it's about life and leadership. In order to be an effective, positive leader, you must first heal yourself. You must first put on your mask in order to get out of the breakdown, to get the breakthrough. You must put some things into practice. Now, in terms of mental health, if you are dealing with, as I said, undue stress, undue grief, because I lost a great aunt February of this year, dear aunt of mine, very close to her, would go vacation at her house in Bluffton, South Carolina, right near the water, place where I just needed to go, and she would cook, and I would go sightseeing or whatever. But so everyone has perhaps dealt with a loss in 2020, 2021, and will suffer a loss. But it's how you handle that. If you need to see a licensed, good, productive therapist, please do so. They call it psychotherapy. Psycho is the mind. It has to deal with the mental. How are you processing that grief? How are you handling the loss of your job? How are you handling the loss of a spouse? Are you going through excessive grief where you feel and think you don't want to live anymore? How are you handling that? And I will say to you, I am a certified life coach and I am a pastoral counselor, but I am not a certified counselor. That's the disclaimer tonight. And even when Dr. Ron comes on in a moment, he's not a certified practicing counselor. So we're not giving you medical counseling. We're giving you advisement, and there is a difference. When you go to a psychotherapy or therapist, it is more where you will be talking to your therapist. And what happens is they help you while you're talking and dialoguing with them. They help you to see if what you're thinking, feeling, or how you are behaving, if it is rational. Is it based in reality? For example, I had a talk with my sister had a talk with me this week, and she said, Morrell, I think or I perceive. And I respected her for that because she said, but I don't believe that this is the case with you. I believe that in life, when we're going to have healthy relationships, and I talk about this in my first chapter of my book, The Unending Love of a Father, the relationship circle. You want to be able to have open dialogue, open communication, learning how to talk, have self-talk. And even if you think someone has wronged you, offended you, or there's tension in a relationship, rather it's the mother and the child, the husband and the wife, or it's the pastor or the imam or the priest with a parishioner, you want to be able to have healthy dialogue and learn the right time and the right place to address the right situation. And then I would say to you what I've learned in the last 4 days or have relearned is it's people's perception, but respect their perception because they say that their perception is their reality. And before I get ready to close, I want to also talk about deep breathing, how important that is. There were moments in the last 5 days where my mother suffered a fall the other day, and I didn't really sure what I was going to expect when I got to her house. And I just say, God, give me strength. And I begin to, one, that was my prayer. I didn't have to get on my knees. In the moment that happened and I went to her house, before then, I'm like, God, your strength, and then give her strength. And I get over there and she's in the bed and I can just see where she was struggling because she's been suffering from diabetes for about 30 years. She takes insulin. She takes so many pills, maybe like 9 pills a day. And she's in the care of my sister and my brother-in-law. And when I went over there, that was stressful for me, but I felt it was more stressful for her. And so it's like, how do you deal with those realities? How do you deal or overcome and get the strength and the inspiration and the breath that you need so that you can give somebody else your breath? Those who are sick, those who are suffering, those who are going through, those who have underlying situations right now or health problems or challenges, how do we give them our breath? How do we give them our inspiration for life? How do we give them hope? How do we speak into them the breath of life as God did and we became a living soul? There's also mindfulness, making sure that we do the deep breathing. I like to sometimes count from 10 all the way to 1 to just pause and think about my thinking, think about what I'm thinking and pondering on, thinking about what my fears are, thinking about what my insecurities are, thinking about what my challenges are, thinking about what my tendencies and dispositions are so that I can acknowledge it and then I can face it and then I can have strategies by talk, biblical affirmations, psychological affirmations that, you know what, this day that I'm about to face, I start with sometimes Tasha Cobb, Break Every Chain. I may start with just singing or Our Father prayer because I realize and I like Genesis chapter 1 verses 1 to 3 in that I'm looking at how God created the world and then recreated the world. So every day I get up or every other day, I'm looking at how God said, how God said, let there be light, how God spoke and there was light and he called it into existence. I look at how he divided the light from the day. I look at and I analyze and psychoanalyze what's dark in my life. What light do I need to bring to that darkness so I can dispel it? I look at the fact that now as I divide it, then I can call it. I can say, hey, I have illumination on, let's just say coaching. I have illumination on if there's depression. I have illumination on toxic relationships. I start thinking so that I can, in a sense, self-medicate myself and prevent me from getting into anxiety, into depression, or anything like that. Now, Dr. Ron, I believe I've covered most of what I wanted to talk about, but I love the fact that you get to be the engineer and you're also, in a sense, the co-host of the more, I'll call it real quick, More Real Brown Show, but it's the maximization show, maximize your life. Now we're going to hear from Dr. Ron.
Yeah, you know what? I want people to understand that, you know, people don't really, we never, you know, and I know that you have done this yourself because you do a lot of research in terms of psychosis and psychology and in terms of mental health. And it breaks down into many different areas, so I don't want to get people confused. I want people to understand something. Diagnosis come from different levels of clinical psychology, okay? Some of the diagnoses come from, and as well as I want people to understand that medical institutions get a lot of foundation funds, governmental funds for research. A lot of medical researchers, a lot of doctors, people in clinical psychology, they do a lot of research. And they do a lot of writing of observation and analyzation and prognosis and diagnosis of different types of mental health concerns that's in the society. So you take manic depressive, you know, manic depressiveness has been around for a long time, and it took on several different levels when it came to a child being manic depressive, a teenager, a young adult, and an adult. And people then you talk about people who live in stressful environments, poverty, challenges, economic, you know, just every day, those environments where there is a high risk populations. And high-risk populations are people who are vulnerable to maybe drug use, alcoholism, homelessness, joblessness. You know, they just have a high level of high school dropout. You know what I'm saying? These are challenges in life. So based on those clinical research, if the clinical research is done in a very high risk area, like a very impoverished place, you'll get a different result. Yeah. If it's done in a upper middle class community, you'll get a different result. If it's done in a very what we can consider a very wealthy community, you'll get a different result. But the human factor, people, is the same. The reaction to the different levels, like you know how they say money can't buy you love or money can't buy you happiness. People who are wealthy and accomplished still get depressive. They get into depressive moods. They have anger. They have all the emotions that human beings have. And so when there's clinical research, they come up with different types of ideas of what that person is going through or what would be a good remedy in terms of therapy and medical services. So I want people to understand that I'm from the old school, so to speak, in terms of clinical research, psychology, sociology, and now you have a different new set of research going on. There's new levels of diagnosis going on right now. You have a more high-tech environment. Children are more exposed to more things than they were. When I was growing up, we were naive about a lot of things. And the more the children get exposed to adult situations, the more you will see intensifying on conditions where kids would mimic psychosis on the level of an adult. So you have to consider, like Coach Morale said, your condition, what you're feeling. You know, you have to sometimes, and I'm going to tell you something, and I know you probably will piggyback, you probably will support this as well, Coach Morale.
Yes.
The most high level in terms of positive results is spiritual.
Right.
Doctors
yes.
have come to the conclusion that when their patients enter into a spiritual remedy for their situation, it's always a positive outcome. I'm not saying that the medical diagnosis is clear and they don't have cancer anymore or they don't have that manic depressiveness anymore, but it comes to a positive, conclusive result. And a lot of doctors are requesting that their patients enter into a spiritual connection. As everybody knows that when you're in the hospital, and if you're a Jew, you can get a rabbi. If you're a Christian, you can get a reverend.
Yeah.
If you're a Muslim, you can get an imam. You know, if you're India and you're a Sikh, you can get someone from a priest to come to your bedside and give you a consultation to give you spiritual connection. So there's many ways to see yourself, and some of us need a spiritual, I think not some of us, everybody can use
yes.
a spiritual connection, because your spirit man is stronger than your physical man. And a
yes.
lot of times we don't have, a lot of us don't have somebody to lean on. You know, we don't have a Coach Morale. You know, on speed dial. You know, so we have to sometimes. The Bible says there comes a point in our life when we have to encourage ourselves. That
yes,
means you have to seek and find a result for yourself. But understanding that if you're depressed and you're feeling a level of depression that you cannot resolve, it doesn't make sense to you. You can't seem to come to a level of conclusion. You need to seek out someone who can help you, a professional that can assist you. And don't feel embarrassed. A lot of people feel embarrassed. A lot of people feel, you know, I hear a lot of wealthy people say, oh, yeah, I have my therapist, you know, I have my shrink, whatever. They
right.
they have, like, you know, sessions every week. Because mental conditions, if one is not aware of it and one don't really take care of it, it's like you take care of your physical self and you take care of your teeth, you take care of everything.
Yes.
But a lot of times we forget to take care of our mental health. The brain
You're right.
is an organ. You know, the brain is a physical organ, and it needs to be what? Exercised. But
the exercise
that it needs is like Coach Morale said, it needs those different levels of of life experiences. It needs love. It needs harmony with the environment. It needs peace. It needs gratification, whatever gratification would mean to a person, whether it's the love of your children, you know, whether it's achieving academics or achieving high level in your profession. So you have all these things that you need, okay? And as a human being, when you see those things are missing, then you see a person dysfunctional at that point, when they're missing something. And that's what the clinical person or the therapist or the professional psychiatrist or psychologist can help you identify those things. And I'm going to also tell people, do not be so quick to start behavior modification meds. Do not be so quick. Try to see if you can remedy in the natural, if you can just naturally remedy, if you can come to some kind of, you know, common, and that's why I said that's where the spiritual come in. The spiritual is always so, you know, it's such a help when you don't have the help. You know what I'm saying? So, Coach Morrell picked up on a tremendous subject. I don't want to be too extensive on it, but I just wanted to just remind everyone to be aware because sometimes I look at myself and I say, you know, Ron, you're depressed. You know, I identify for myself, and then I start try to locate where the depression came from, you know.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and so I would say to everyone, you know, be aware. And another thing is we're in a toxic environment right now. We're in an environment where there's political upheaval. We're in an environment where there's a lot of wars and people are being hurt. I was looking at I was looking at the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and I saw little children crying and dead and shot, and it took a toll on me. You know, I had to get on my knees and pray because I was really crying, and because I love children and children are so innocent, and I just feel so bad for them, you know. And so I had to gather myself up, you know, gather myself up in that situation and pray to God and ask God to intercede on behalf of the people in Palestine and Israel. So I'm just saying to people that we're in a toxic environment. A lot of things are happening. We have a political upheaval. We have economic problems. We have social problems. We have a lot of alcoholism. We have a lot of drugs. We have a lot of poverty, homelessness. Children are being abducted. They're being, you know, killed. It's a lot of things going on. And if you listen to the news every night and you don't think that has a physiological effect on you, then buyer beware. It has an effect on you. Everything that happens. So I sometimes, Coach Morrell, just distance myself. I'm not distancing myself from society and what's going on in the world, but sometimes I take a break. And I listen. I read a good book, or I listen to good music. Classical music is very relaxing. If anybody can, you know, anybody like classical music, so I get into something that relaxes me. After I saw the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, I just went into listening to some classical music and got myself together. Brilliant. You know what I'm saying? Because I could become manic depressive over something that I do not have any control over other than getting on my knees and praying that God will heal the land and heal the people and stop the wars. So, and that makes me feel empowered, people, by having someone I can go to and pray to and know that he is able to do above and beyond and exceedingly anything that I can do. You know what I'm saying? So put the burden, like the Bible says, go lay your burdens upon the throne. So my advice is to be aware. You know what I'm saying, Coach Morrell? Just be aware of who you are. I have six kids, and all my kids do not react to things in the same manner. You know, so I'm aware of that. And God is aware that we all have our weaknesses and our strengths, and he knows how to console us and bring us back to a certain level. And also talking to someone, even have a good confidant. You know, like I said, I got my best friend. I can call him. Right. I'm saying, like, you know, I have a best friend. I can call him. I can say, hey, man, you know what? I'm going through this, another thing. And he'll say, hey, man, you know how you are. And then we'll start laughing. And I forgot the situation, and I go on. So do not be people tend to become inverted. You know, they don't want to deal with people when they feel hurt and you feel pain. So I know a lot of people back when I was growing up. When people were molested or hurt by someone, people, the victim felt And a lot of times it's because of the way the law enforcement would, you know, like women would tell you back in the 50s and the 60s, if they were raped by a man and they would go to the authorities, like the police department, they would make them feel like they're promiscuous or something wrong with them, or they're, you know, a streetwalker or whatever. So not to be shamed, a lot of women would just, you know, keep it to themselves and not say anything. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is that sometimes, sometimes you got to recognize your weaknesses, your strengths. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you got to recognize, you know what, I can't handle this. I need someone else, you know, and that's what, like, a person like you, Coach Morale, you come in, you know, you can help people at times. You have, I know you have a 15-minute free consultation and whatever.
Yes, I do.
And I would suggest that people reach out to Coach Morale, reach out to people like Coach Morale, you know, reach out to someone, you know, go a good friend, a good confidant, you know, but in the final analysis, you know, you might need to talk to your priest. You might need to talk to a professional at that point.
Yeah.
But just recognize, just recognize who you are and where you are in your life. And if something is sustainably disheartening to you, causing you a tremendous amount of pain or depressiveness, seek out help. That would be my suggestion. Yes.
Wow. Thank you so much, Dr. Ron. As always, Wednesday after Wednesday, you are dropping very positive, compassionate nuggets to our audience. I so appreciate you. I was telling my mother today.
Well, you know, it's my birthday. I got to show off, you know.
I know, that's right. I told Mom, I said, Mom, my brother, I said, I got to call my brother. She said, oh, he's no longer your friend. He's your brother now. And I said, yeah. We actually called you on your business line just wishing you a happy birthday. So she gave you a nice shout out. She should be listening tonight.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Tell her, I appreciate that.
I
love your mother so much, you know.
I appreciate it. I really do. And so, audience, as, you know, Dr. Ron so eloquently, compassionately, empathetically said to you or just encouraged you to do, is that be aware of where you are, your state, your emotions. And I'm also understanding in terms of don't seek to blame the world. The world, there's two things. If you feel that the world, your mom, your dad, your sister, your brother, your cousin, spot the fish, your goldfish has started that problem, created that problem for you, then they have the power to solve that problem. But when you say that perhaps they may have contributed to the problem, now what am I going to do? How am I, even if I'm reacting, now how can I calm myself down, check my thought processes and my emotions to get to a place where I'm going to get the help that I need? I'm going to talk to a trusted person, a therapist, or a friend, and I'm going to now take back the power and say, what can I do for my own mental environment? And then get to that place that once you learn the strategies, please look back, reach back, because somebody, whatever you just went through, whether it's the loss of a loved one, a job, or a salary, or if your husband's divorced you, no matter what it is, or vice versa, or the kids are cutting up and they don't want to stay on Zoom and they're focusing on their game more than their homework, somebody else is going through that. So when you start learning strategies to overcome that mental breakdown, the emotional, that physical, the psychological, the spiritual, the financial, the political, the cultural breakdown, now use the inspiration to breathe life back into someone else and give them strategies in a very compassionate way. Dr. Ron, I want to do something that's a little bit different tonight, where I would like to, if it's okay, we open up those lines just to see how can we help the audience. If they have any ideas of topics we can address for future, and how can we improve our services, maybe for just the next 5 to 10 minutes.
Okay, great. We open up 704-953. Your mic is open. You're on with Coach Morale. 704-953, you're there. Are you muted? You may have to unmute yourself as well. Okay. We'll go to 980-613. Your mic is open as well. Okay.
And that's my mom.
Oh, okay. All right. Wonderful, wonderful. God bless, God bless. Okay. All right. Well, you know, you always get the most interesting questions that seem to come from the text messages, and we'll go
yes.
over there and see what they're thinking. Because a lot of people,
okay.
I think, get most ingenious when they stop to type.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
We have Boris. Corrupt. I hope I don't mess his name up. Karapetovich.
Uh-huh.
Karapetovich. Karapedovich. He's from Manhattan, New York. And
okay.
He is saying a lot of times when he feels depressed, so he's going through an emotional feelings, or he sees a subject matter on the news and he wants to discuss it with
yes.
people. He said based on a person's political or their ideology
okay.
about life, a lot of times it's different than his, and he finds himself more in a confusing conversation that turns into an argument mm-hmm. rather than a conversation that would resolve his issues. He wants to know how do you identify mm-hmm. those types of people that would be beneficial to you outside of a professional?
Right. That's interesting. Thank you so much for that question. It is interesting. For example, what I made a decision for 20, really kind of like for the last 4 years, that I was not going to engage in conversations in terms of every action, reaction, good or bad, from the prior leadership. I made a decision that I would take what I'm seeing and develop strategies and or what can I do in my community to combat what I'm seeing perhaps on the news. And so I would engage with my family just a little bit, just to stay socially astute, but that would not be something I would have for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And then there are certain conversations that I do not have with everyone. It could be more like if I'm talking about vaccination, or if I'm talking about what people would maybe call conspiracy. Those conversations is reserved for people on a certain level. My brother laughed at me, but I said to him, I have the pleasure of also coming on Christian Fellowship Council's radio station every other Wednesday. I usually come on once a week, but I'm writing my book, so I'm coming on every other Wednesday just to complete my book. But what I shared with him is that the question was posed, am I going to take the vaccination shot? And I just believe that although, quote unquote, there may be millions of listeners, I believe that we must, especially when we have an audience, even if it's an audience of one, be respectful and then also responsible about certain conversations that we have with certain people who are not ready for those conversations. And I'm not talking about someone that just doesn't agree with you. In life, and I'm finding this out even within my family, they may ask me, let's just say, are you going to be vaccinated? And if they don't like my answer, then they'll try to convert me. That's what we do when we love people. We say, well, you know what? I think you need to see it this way. But the reality is I choose not to continue to engage in conversations that's going to leave it where I'm angry at the individual or they're angry at me. You would have to really, one, discern, meaning before the conversation is brought, you bring that conversation up. You want to say, is this someone I think I could share this heavy information with or my political view? Is this someone that's going to agree to disagree if I said black and they said white? And when you see that you cannot have certain types of conversations with the individual, then pull back. And it's just really trial and error. You don't know until you know. And once you know, hey, get going and move out of that situation. And says, you know what? I understand your point of view, And rather you understand my point of view or not, let's just agree to disagree or keep it moving. And there are some people who just like to argue. As I mentioned earlier, the pandemic has thrust people, and then looking at our prior leadership, and then like Dr. Ron said, now from the pandemic and taking off for some places the mask and visiting your relatives in nursing home and hospitals now we're looking at this war that, although it's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles away, we are still affected by it. So we're looking at buildings being bombed. The first thing the mind says to you that this could be you, or how do you sleep at night? So there's some things like Dr. Ron talked about, my brother, you would have to pull away from. We don't have to engage in every conversation in every situation. Even when I do current events, I do my research. I may look at CNN or I'll pull it up on the website, but I am not looking at the news Sunday to Sunday. It's depressing. If you turn on your TV and I don't have cable, and I'll end it there, I don't have cable by choice. But just the television itself, within less than 2 minutes, those channels, when you flip, it's about death, it's about killing, it's about murder, it's about rape. Why do I want to feed my great, brilliant mind that mess? What I feed on, I'm going to actually sleep on, and I'm going to have a nightmare, and I'm going to think it's reality, and I'm going to get up nervous. So I don't want to get up nervous. My brother, just choose who you talk to, when you talk to them, and if it's a heavy conversation, but you know what? I really have something on my heart, and I don't need to talk to a therapist. I don't need to talk to an imam. I don't need to talk to a priest. I don't need to talk to a pastor, but I just want to talk to you because you're my close friend. This is on my mind, and is it okay that we talk about it? Prepare them. Get them ready for it. And if you realize it was too heavy for them, then pull back from it. And there are many days I have to pull back from a conversation. Or something will happen. Maybe they telephone a ring, or they'll get a call, and I pull right out. And I'd be like, thank you, God. Take my exit at this point. So I hope that has helped you. I really appreciate you tuning in, comments, questions, and sharing. Thank you so much. Thank you, Dr. Ron.
Great, great, great. We have also a question from Carrie Ferreira from Des Moines, Iowa.
Uh-huh.
And she wants to know, she says she's a Catholic. On Fridays, she lights a candle and she pray. And a lot of times she don't feel fulfilled or resolved of her issues. And,
right.
She ends up meeting a friend for coffee or something, and she finds that friend conversation one-on-one with some person getting feedback, she has a better resolve of her issue. So she wants to know, is it better to talk to an individual person? Is it better to pray? Or what do you feel is the best thing?
Right. I believe that all of the above. If we're if we're in school and they says, okay, A, B, or C, or D, I would say all of the above. And I'm glad that she brought that up. In terms of conversation, social connection, it goes back to our other person who sent the text. It is so important that we stay connected to healthy individuals. And it doesn't mean we disconnect to those that are not healthy. It's just that we don't make them part of our inner circle. There's a difference, right? You surround yourself, and I'm actually going to get the saying in a moment. I brought it up a moment ago about your constellation, who you surround yourself with, making sure that that person themselves, not perfect, because we are all imperfect human beings, mastering to be perfect in God's sight. And in his sight, we're whole. We're complete, right? We're being renewed day by day. We're being renewed to God's image. But it says here, and this is Jim Rohn, R-O-H-N, you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with, the most time. And when you can call up someone and go out perhaps if you're an outdoors especially, you're looking at the, perhaps it depends on where you live. You can be in New Hampshire in the mountains. You can be in the area of the city and you can look at the skyscrapers and the buildings. You can be in a rural area and you can look at the trees and the green trees and the trees turning, you know, depending on the season, yellow to orange. You can just take a ride. All of those things become very therapeutic and it's good. What I, in addition to that, and you mentioned about praying, you mentioned about the candles. The candle can be very therapeutic. It can be the smell. Lavender helps to calm and bring a nice calming environment. And also in terms of just sometimes just sitting dark, sitting quietly in the dark, in the quietness, and hearing your thought, breathing and listening and just thinking about where you are, how your day starts with prayer. As I said to you, I like to look at Genesis chapter 1-3 in addition to other chapters in the Bible, but that's my favorite, that it's time for me now, no matter how rumbumptious or topsy-turvy the day or the night before could have been, that now it's time for me to create a new day and to pray and to, and prayer is communication with God. Now, I do recognize that there are people that are listening or are part of the culture that does not believe in Almighty God, Elohim, one God. And I give respect, but I'm saying personal conversation out to the public, this is what I do. And do, as Dr. Ron talked about earlier, do I believe spirituality and have an awareness of God? Does it work? Yes, it does. It has saved my life and my family's life. But I'm saying to you, my encouragement is to be able to talk to God. You may call him supreme being. Some people call it, what, nature? Some people call him the environment. I believe that when you are communicating, and it doesn't mean you have to always be on your knees. You can be washing dishes. You can be at the coffee shop. Because I'll give you a quick story, my sister that's out in Iowa. I took my sister out yesterday for lunch. I went uptown Charlotte, and usually I drive there or I'm driving past because I don't want to get stuck in all that traffic, but I made the decision, we're going to go and we're going to have a nice time, even if we get, you know, dealing with traffic. And it was pretty cool in the beginning, you know, eating outdoors and we're sitting and we're talking. But the reality, you can see the young fellas on their little moped or something like that, and both ethnic groups, light skin and dark skin. And then you can see illegal activities. So I'm like, where I live at, it's pretty quiet for the most part. And I went 20 minutes away to have dinner or a brunch, lunch, and I'm enjoying myself. But then after a while, you can see where the workers were getting their high on. Now, that's their lifestyle. The thing about it is I'm on the outside environment, eating outdoors so I can relax. And after a while, I said to my sister, I said, it's almost time to go. Because then I got nervous. And so I don't know where you live or... But I am saying that sometimes our environment itself can become nerve-wracking. And so we have to just choose our environment. Make sure your house is your number one place. My sister came to my apartment yesterday, and she was like, oh, wow, it looks really good in here. Nice and bright, and I can see da-da-da-da. You know, you had that HGTV going on. And I said, yeah, because my environment is for me. And so before I say, you know what, I'm going to make sure that I'm entertaining my friends, which I have not been since the pandemic, but I make sure it's for me. So set your environment up, your physical environment, where when you get up in the morning, you can say, wow, this is beautiful to look at. Now, I'll also say that it's a process. If you have a busy life, you have children, how incorporate them into cleaning up the environment. And if they mess it up, to clean it up, because that happens. They still teach them how to do it. They're learning that in school, 3-4 years old, learning how to clean up, singing with the Bonnie song, and giving them responsibilities to make sure that the environment is peaceful. If you have papers that you need to go through, a paper from 1949, get rid of those papers or put it on a scanner or something like that. We're still talking about coming out of that breakdown, understanding your environment so that you can have a breakthrough. Getting rid of unnecessary clutter. Clutter house, clutter mind. So that's hopefully that can help you. Prayer, social connection is very important.
Great. I believe I have enough time now for another question.
Okay, sounds good. And then we'll get ready to invite Mrs. Sharon on.
Yeah, as soon as she get here as well. Exactly. Yes. Yes, we have Peter Anderson from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And his question is, in a society now, he said, where there are so many types of different ways and one can seek therapy and sessions with people and there are, I guess you're talking about these group therapy sessions where everybody, you know, in a group and they talk about, you know, they have similarities or what and problems and stuff like that, and they get up and or sit down or whatever it is and they talk about their problems.
Yeah.
He wants to know, what do you suggest is a better form of therapy, group sessions or individual one-on-one sessions?
Right. Peter, have you been reading my mind? I, matter of fact, in the last 2 weeks, I am actually talking to a therapist, and there are, as I begin to kind of psychoanalyze, because I took psychology, and I took what we call creation therapy, where I am, which was certified to do what we call a temperament analysis profile. That does not mean that I'm licensed to counsel. It means I can administer and interpret the profile, and I'm a certified life coach. And as I was thinking about the different methods that coaches use, a therapist, a licensed professional therapist use, I was thinking in terms of the group counseling may not be. Now, this is my opinion, that you want to first start out with the individual. And I do know that, what's the word can be? You save time. It can be cost effective to have individual counseling and group counseling. And what a lot of people are doing now, as opposed to having, say, 20 people per week on their schedule, they'll say to them, hey, we'll offer you a discounted price so that you can be, you know, have group therapy where there's maybe more than one or three people. I don't really know how effective that is. My opinion is I would prefer individual therapy. I would prefer a couple of reasons. One, when you are in a therapy session, the goal of that session is for the therapist is to get you to talk. When we went back to psychotherapy, it's actually talking. In coaching, it can be called the Socratic method of coaching, where you are eliciting and respond from the person that you're coaching, your coachee. And you are not telling them what to feel, what to think, and what to say, and their goals, but you are asking them questions. For example, let's just say the coachee wants help in time management. And you can actually say to the individual, what time do you need to be at work? Let's just say they say 9 o'clock, right? Then you say, okay, how long does it take you to get dressed? And let's just say they say 1 hour. So 8 to 9, right? And then you can say, well, what time do you eat breakfast or anything like that? Do you need to dress the children before you get ready? And then you say, well, how many hours of sleep do you need? And so you start backwards. You're asking them the question. And as they map it out, then you can say to them, then how much time do you need for traveling time? So, you know, if they say an hour, okay, 8 to 9, you need to be actually on the road, in the car, taking the train, or whatever the case may be. And you are asking them to really solve their own problem. Because if the counselor or the coach or the therapist is telling you what to do, what goals to set, you may not be that successful because it was not your goals. And you may not have the ambition to accomplish those goals. And so I recommend individual therapy, unless there's no choice and this particular counselor, coach, or therapist is really good, because you want them to hone in on your problem and give you strategies to show you or to teach you or give you insight in how you can solve them. So I hope that, Peter, that answers your question.
Okay, great. And now your special guest is here as well. And
excellent.
Which is Mrs. Sharon Nielsen, director of Woodland Academy. Special topic today: things that make you go, that reminds me of Arsenio Hall show.
Please.
He used to tell the jokes of things that make you go, Very, very interesting. When we're going to open up and give a nice welcome to Mrs. Nielsen.
Hello,
hi, everybody.
Mrs. Nielsen.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing really good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be back on to continue having the conversation, to reach in the community, and hopefully just continue to do some good work and to hopefully inform our community on just coming together and listening to each other's stories and learning and growing together.
Oh, wow. I'm excited. I am so excited. So listen, we were just talking about basically breaking down so that we can break through. And Dr. Ron so eloquently talked about the particular things in communities that becomes or have children, families, and community that can be at high risk for depression or anxiety. We talked about the pandemic, and we just gave strategies to overcome it. So we just had a few callers in a moment ago that was just, we were just talking about what type of therapies are good, how to overcome depression and socialization, how important those things are. So I just want you to speak from what's on your heart, things that make you go,
So I think, as we navigate through life, I think we have a lot of things, whether it's things that happen to us as children or things that happen to us with relationships, whether it is platonic relationships, familiar relationships, or it's relationships with partner. There might have been some things that, like Mary pondered in her heart. These things just make you go, And sometimes there is the deepness in it, meaning that it's an unconscious consciousness for you to kind of dig, to bury it deeply, because you don't want to resurface or you don't want to address those things. And so you kind of like to keep it under the rug. Or it's something that you like, I'm really puzzled about what this person said or what they meant or what their actions meant. So I really want to open up the conversation for us to talk about those things that make you go, things that make you wonder or ponder, or instead of setting the question, they bring on more questions that you might have for yourself, for somebody else. So that's kind of like the driving force behind me having this conversation, because just like I said, as I went through life, I know I had a lot of things that happened to me or colleagues or girlfriends, and we're sitting there talking, and it's like, my boyfriend did this, and I was just wondering, like, what's going on? And just having that conversation to figure things out together as a community.
Wow, thank you. No, it's definitely needed, Sharon. What was so important, too, and interesting about the conversation tonight, someone from Iowa, and I forgot their name, how to pronounce it, but it was just talking about when you have those healthy conversations, you go out with your girlfriend and just have some coffee, just to be able to talk and to share, to relieve the anxiety, or to, as we said, have them as a sounding board.
So I think we also have to open ourselves up in a way that's safe, for sure, because you don't want to open yourself up to the wrong person and get the wrong advice, or open yourself up to somebody who that you cannot trust. So so creating for yourself that safe space, somebody that you know, that you have shared with before, and it has stayed, and that information has stayed safely with that person. They're giving you sound advice, but having somebody that you can talk to, somebody that you can share, somebody you can be your authentic self with, I think is very critical. And it reminds me, a few years ago, I'm a child care provider, and I had two children who were playing in the kitchen area. And one of the young ladies said to the other young lady, and I don't know what caused her to make this announcement, but she said to the young, to the other young child that was in the kitchen area, that my father is in prison. She said he's locked up.
Right.
And the little girl that she was talking to, her eyes became saucers, and she said back to her, my dad is too.
Wow.
So, and now this is information that was not privy to any of the teachers or to myself. The parents did not share this. So this is very surprising to us. But you can tell that it weighed on the person who spoke. It was on her mind. It was in her heart. And she shared it. And she shared it with a person, a little girl who's experiencing the same thing. And so they kind of found each other. And we were able to talk to the parents and support the child's need to have a grounding information about what happened, why her father is no longer in her life. And we have to be really careful about when things like this happen, because if children will make, if we don't give them a reason or give them the rationale for something, they will draw their own conclusion. And
true.
So we want to make sure that they understand that it's not that your father did not want to be in your life. It's not that they don't love you. It's that your father is in prison and he cannot be in your life. He cannot see you. He can call you, or, you know, different things like that, to give them that context that helps them understand what is going on. And so I say the same thing, like you might have something that you're puzzled about, or you're questioning, or your future, or you're questioning decisions that you've made, questioning the commitment of others or your commitment to others, and really finding that safe space, that safe person to have that honest conversation, I think is critical to you moving on, critical to you figuring things out, whether it is a professional or it is a core support group that you have.
Wow, that's powerful. That's powerful. Yeah, it's space. I was reading something today as I was doing my research, and it just talked about non-judgmental mindset, that when people are talking with you or they're sharing, that it's not so much, oh my God, this is such good news, and guess what, I need to spread it. No, this is private. This is only for you and your ears. You know, not to be sheer, not to be writing about it on Facebook or preaching about it over the pulpit or anything like that, you know. And just like you said, my goodness, being able to even lock arms with those who are experiencing, if you're experiencing grief right now, to find someone else or a group that you can connect with. And that's so important. And earlier we just talked about the average, you know, you are the average of the five people you spend your most time with. And so if you are going through grief, or if your spouse or your boyfriend, your significant other is in prison, then perhaps find a group where they can be support you. Whatever it is, someone just lost their job or you're transitioning, or if you just started a new business. I had the privilege of being referred to a group, you know, where it's the American Business Women Association. I'm new in business somewhat, and to now connect, and that social connection, and Sharon, you really know about this, and we talked about this, is that when it comes down to strengthening family and the protective factors, when you knew about the little girls and their fathers being in prison, you realize, okay, even though the parents did not tell you, but now that you know this information has been given to you, what are you going to do about it? And now you begin to provide the resources and the support. And that's what it's all about. And sometimes we can find out something about a relative that they didn't tell us, but indirectly maybe another relative told us. And it's really not to go back and say, this is what this person said, but it says, you know what, how can I support you? You know, perhaps you lost your job. How can I support you? And those things are very important. And then there's some people who are closed down. But like you said, being able to have that safe space and feeling comfortable to share that information to people who are committed to you. And I'll say in the last 4 or 5 days, I really went on like an express of sharing in my week, you know, the last two. I feel like I'm on Friday right now instead of Wednesday, but I just, you know, was just, you know, again, as someone else was getting their healing, they needed the healing. They needed it immediately, and they needed to talk to me. And I'm just like, oh, my God, you're dumping all this on me. And besides the Lord, or in addition to the Lord, I went to my peace, and you were one of them. Like, hey, you know, how can I see this and see this in a different light? And like you said, deal with unconscious thoughts, conscious thoughts, and then bring it to the surface in the right environment at a, what we can try to make it into a right timing. And timing is really everything. And to be able to say, I want to air this out, or I'm thinking this. And again, respecting people for their thoughts and knowing that although they think you may have a problem or you may have an issue, it doesn't make it so. It does not make it so. But yet hearing them out and not, what's the word I want to use? Assaulting them, insulting them, putting them down, but empathizing with them. And earlier, and I'm going to pull back for a second because, hey, you're the special guest, you know, empathizing with them and putting yourself in their shoe and saying, how would I want to be received? And Dr. Ron, you know that's very important. And to the audience in psychotherapy, as we said, we're not therapists, you know, but it's important to allowing people to talk and talk what they believe their reality is, because what they think is their reality.
Right. And I think the other thing, too, is important, which you said, too, is sharing your story. And you have to be very careful when you're sharing your story to make sure that you're not sharing somebody else's story, right, when you're sharing your story. So when you're telling about a situation that's going on, so making sure that you understand that you might, in that story that you're telling, it might involve somebody else. And being mindful about if somebody's telling a story that involves you, how would they want to paint that picture? And understanding that we see things from different perspectives, understanding that it doesn't necessarily mean that a person has to be, in order for a person to be right, another person has to be wrong. There are opportunities in which, or experiences in which, from the point of view that you are telling a story, that you have two people who are right, who have valid reasons and valid perspectives. So just honoring that. The other thing, too, is being mindful of who you're talking to understand what their own strengths are, what their struggles are. And so when you're giving them advice, you want to give them the advice that makes sense for them. So sometimes advice is not what you would do, but what you can see them doing and understanding
that's
that
powerful.
Also.
Wow. Say that one more time, Sharon.
So sometimes giving advice is not about what you would do, but what you would see them do or what you can see them do based on who they are.
Wow. Wow. That is powerful. That's very powerful. And it's very important because I can tell when I'm not being objective. I may come to a conclusion and then I'm like, check yourself, check your thinking. Are you being rational? Are you being subjective here? And then I'll say, oh, okay, let me be objective. And it's hard, especially when you're in a relationship and there's tension in a relationship or there's misunderstanding, being able to step back and psychoanalyze yourself. And I believe that's so important. And Dr. Ron talked about that earlier. Being aware of where you are. If you're depressed, say you're depressed. If you're feeling lonely, say that you're feeling lonely. But now what are you going to do? Are you going to stay there? Or are you going to seek help, professional help? Or are you going to seek a trusted friend or relative or imam or, you know, the priest or pastor? What are you going to do? Or are you going to just you know, self-medicate and get intoxicated. And then guess what? When it's all over, you're going to have to keep doing that.
Yeah.
Because the problem is really not going anywhere. But it is important. And perception is very interesting. It really is. Yes.
So I don't know if there's anyone who have any questions or if they have anything that happened to them, that question about that, that they're seeking advice about, but please feel free to type it in the chat or to send it, put it out there in the universe and see what kind of response that you get. But I think one of the other things that you said, Mara, is about relationships are very important. And I think that that's what we need to return to. We need to return to that relationship, building strength that we used to have in the community, where you had a community that was kind of focused around the relationships with the members. And you had a feeling of being in an extended family and that you can trust that community to take care of you. And I know that we have moved so far from that, but we need to return to building that trusted community and building those trusted relationships, because it's very critical. And one of the things that helps us when we are in a relationship that has damaged us, or we have pain that we are holding on to because we were in a relationship that has damaged us, is that new exposure to positive relationships helps heal the past hurts and the past pains that we have. But it has to be a consistent, uplifting, powerfully positive relationship to help us grow and to learn and to heal.
Yes, yes. That's important. The village.
Yes.
You know, I was writing this scenario that the pandemic was like this 3,000, 4,000 car that has just left everyone coming to a screech and a halt, a stop, long, loud noise. And we're like, when is this noise going to stop? And then it just broke down the socialization, the structure we've had in America's society that we were used to. And so now we are, as I was saying earlier, getting our breath back, getting our inspiration back, to want to live, to want to see another day, to now from living, from surviving, and going from surviving to thriving, from optimization to maximization, so that, as you said, we can rebuild the village. It takes a village, and what you provide at Woodland Academy and in the city of Philadelphia and around the world, you provide strategies for children, for families, and community. And it started with your own home. And I've seen this as being the godmother of your children, is that you and your husband, you guys have a safe haven for your children. You have a place that they can feel safe and that they can talk with you. And from there, you have extended that to the hundreds of children and hundreds and hundreds of children that you have helped to develop in the last 25, 30 years. And being able to now say, how can we provide housing for families in Philadelphia? How can we provide family programs in the city of Charlotte? How can we, Dr. Ron, what he does is, how can we help young men who are transitioning out of the prison system, out of incarceration, into now their own apartment, getting their jobs, getting security? Teaching them how to love themselves, teaching them how to learn from the situations that they are now overcoming. I have a cousin that's on the line now. He serves, you know, I believe he's a captain or something like that in the Army, how he can serve his country. And so everyone to be able, and those that are listening, to be able to come together and rebuild so that we can have those extended families, that they may not be blood relatives by marriage, but that we can say, hey, let's build a new community so that we can actually, and this is a thought I'm having, this is, you know, I have a dream, where we can have our own facilities in terms of disease, you know, a center disease control, that we can continue to study, which we've been doing in the last 400 years, and we're still coming up with ways to fight infectious disease so that we can have our printing companies, so that we can provide solutions and good vaccinations or good way of eating healthy, good way of reducing stress, that we can have our own hospitals and our own entertainment centers, and we can have our own schools, and we can have just different systems that the family, when they want to be strengthened, it don't always have to be anything negative or crises going on, but we can have our learning institutions and our academies so that we can thrive and that we can have connection.
Right. And it's important for us to tell our stories, too, so that we are not forgotten, to tell the stories of our history to our children and to instill in them the importance to tell that history to their children, so that your history and your past, it serves as a foundation. It grounds you. And just making sure that your child understands the wealth of contribution that we as a people have made to this nation is critical in them understanding their potential and grounding them also.
Wow, wow, my goodness. I tell you, you're igniting me. Inspiration. Keep breathing from Philadelphia all the way to North Carolina. Yes, that's so important. And it was a quick conversation I had with Margaret, and I think it was Donald, a little earlier. Our history, our identity. And as he said, my brother-in-law was just saying, our identity was cut off, our language, the true language that we spoke, the true relationship with God was just damaged and marred, and now it's mixed. And it's like, how do we find our way back? But like you said, storytelling, writing it. And I'm so glad that this is a time of renaissance, Dr. Ronz, in terms of people are writing books. They're writing anthologies, they're singing, they're dancing, they're producing, they're coming out with products and services. It is so wonderful. Oh, my God, what a renaissance. This is a great time. Audience, this is a great time to be alive.
Yes,
write your song. Write your book. Whatever it is you want to do, sing.
Tell your story.
Create. Tell the story. Keep telling the story. And I know that teenagers sometimes like, oh, because I remember, like, Mom, here we go again. I remember, when you were in South Carolina, when you were on the farm, and you were feeding the hogs, and seriously, she did, you know? And we'd be like, oh, gosh. But we listen, and as she's getting older, she just turned 83 2 weeks ago, and we're listening.
God bless her.
Sometimes she just wants to talk about the past, and I'm just let her talk. I'm like, okay, glean. And so now I know about my great-great-grandfather. I know about my great-grandmother. I know about her life. I know how she fed, you know, the hogs. I know how she chopped wood and those type of things and was on a little pot, you know, since she was between 7 and 9 and cooking. And so those, Sharon, those, and Dr. Ron, and to the audience, those particular virtues, although it was a little harsh, but that was the time of day. And guess what? I believe that's why she's alive now, doing her best to overcome diabetes and high blood pressure from eating all of the pigs and the and the red meat and the chitlin and stuff like that. But here we are. We are live for a reason. Oh, my God. We're here for a reason, audience. So, Dr. Ron, do we have anybody else that have texted?
Yes, we have
questions?
A continuous, you know,
okay,
from earlier. We have continuous text messages as well. And Deatra Hall from Baltimore, Maryland, and her question to Mrs. Sharon Nielsen is she has a friend that has a problem with elevating weight, you know, losing weight, gaining weight, elevates, and she felt she needed to confide in her in terms of nutrition and things that she could do to help herself. And the friend, she said, tend to break down and get angry at her, but she feel like she is reaching out to her. So that's something that makes her go, she don't understand how to reach to her friend, because at one point she's reaching out to her, and at the other point, when she addresses the issue of her weight situation, she seemed to get angry.
So I definitely feel you, because listen, it's COVID, and I think the stress, we have different ways that we handle stress. So prior to COVID, eating was probably a coping mechanism. And so we have got to unravel what is it that she is trying to comfort herself from. What is food to her? So I think what could be helpful is to pull back and just say, how can I help you be successful? What do you need me to do? And starting from that point, to get her to say, I need you to do X, I need you to do Y, and then typing it up in a form that is a contract, saying, this is the way that I'm going to support you. So, for example, I know that I have a tendency to pull back when you start, I need you to help me plan my meal. I need you to help me to be accountable, right? And understanding what that looks like, and just knowing that, okay, so listen, this is what you're saying. So that means that when I say to you, you are having something that you shouldn't be having, don't get an attitude with me. Don't hang up the phone. Don't roll your eyes. I am fulfilling our contract. Mm-hmm. And then giving some balance to that, saying, okay, I'll let you have like two things that you can eat, and I'm going to give you that allowance so that it's not so rigid, giving that leeway so the person doesn't feel that they're in prison or feels overly stressed, because that just helps to continue that cycle of not eating, and taking it day by day by day by day. That's kind of an easier way to approach it. And then if that doesn't work, then understand that we might need to use some other resources. We might need to use some additional strength. We might need to talk to somebody to unravel, get to a deeper issue and deeper understanding of why we are using food the way we are using it. I hope that was helpful, Dee.
Great. We're going to go to the callers. We have 347-833. We're going to open up your mic. You're on with Coach Morale and Mrs. Sharon Nielsen, and we're talking about things that make you go, maybe you're confused about something and you want to get some clarity. We're going to open up 347-833. Your mic is open. Are you there? 347-833, are you there? Can you hear me? Are you muted? We can hear you. Your television is on loud, but 347-833, you're on. Okay. All right, we lost her. But anyway, we'll go to text messages which we have plenty of.
Okay, good.
We have Donald Ellison from Sumter, South Carolina. And his question, the thing that makes him go, is why people that have financial problems keep borrowing money and do not try to find ways to raise money, maybe an extra job or an extra business or something that they could do to raise money. And he has a friend whom has that problem, and he's been trying to help him to find a way in which he could raise money consistently for himself. But instead, the friend continuously beg or ask him for money, and he does not have the money. He has four kids of his own, and he thinks his friend is being very selfish by not considering his situation and his family. And he addressed the issue with his friend, which he thought was in a very calm way, and his friend blew up and got mad at him and do not want to speak with him again.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely a whenever we bring money into a situation, into a relationship, it can make people act funny. So money makes people act funny. So let me just say that. So definitely, let me say a couple of things, right? That everybody in life is on a journey, right, where we learn and we grow. and people are at different points in their life. And we learn and we grow from how we were raised, what we were taught, and what we have held on to. And so there may not have been anyone in his life that really helped him to understand his potential as an earner, his potential and the awesomeness that he can have within himself through networking or whatever other things that he can do to bring that income in. And so he is trying to figure out the way that he might know how to get money, which is to ask other people who have the resources. And mm-hmm. so his decision to cut you off or to be angry may not so much be about you, but be about his own frustration with himself and his inability to kind of figure it out and kind of make it work. So you might need to give him his space. What I would do is, if you can think of every now and then, if you still have his number, if you think of things that he can do, there's a lot of programs now for people who can work from home. So sending him a link. If he takes it, if he doesn't take it, that's on him. But just sending him a link of things that he can do to help increase his income, help bring some more revenue into it, that's what I would do. But I would not stress yourself out because, like I said, he may not be at the place where he's ready to have a conversation, where he's ready to accept change.
Okay, so great. Okay. All right, we have Keisha Sturham. I hope I said that correctly. Keisha Sturham of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. She has a friend that's engaged to a young man, and her friend wants to push the issue of marriage with this young man. And every time they get into the marriage issue, it turns into an argument, and her friend goes out and drink and party and do things and don't take his calls, and then she feels that she's drawing herself further away from her potential husband rather than bringing him in by doing the things that she do. She addressed the issue with her. She got mad at her as well, and she's getting ready to cut her off now. And they've been friends since 5 years old, and they are now 27 years old. And she's concerned because she loves her and she doesn't want to lose that friendship. What should she do? Yeah. It makes her go, but she wants to also know how can she heal her friendship again.
Okay. So I think that the way you ended it is the way you started. You ended it by saying that you really love her and you don't want to see her hurt. And that's the way to begin the conversation. Say, listen, you and I have been friends since we were 5. I love you and I want the best for you. You and I may not always agree, but when I see you do something that hurts you, it hurts me. And I want you to be happy. And I'm sure that you want me to be happy too. And start from that place. And have her talk to you about what she's feeling, her anxieties about the person that she's with, that he doesn't want to get married, how that makes her feel. And encourage her to have those honest conversations with her. With that person that she wants to get married to and get to the heart of it. It may be that she's just not with the same, with the right person, but she's not ready to admit that to herself. And there's nothing that you can do to get her to that point, but to continue to love her and continue to support her and continue to kind of encourage her to come to truth on her own and in her own time. But tell her that you will be there for her. And if it's a painful situation, and it's a painful conversation that she's not willing to have, then you're going to have to let it go. And it might be the point where you say, I can't be here. I can't watch you unravel like this anymore. I'm here for you. If you need me, if you need somebody to talk to, I will be there. But I cannot watch you unravel. I cannot watch you go through this. And I know that at the end of the day, you are still in pain. And what you're doing to kind of fill that void is not working. So when you are ready to do something different, let's have a conversation.
Interesting, interesting. Okay, this is anonymous, and this is from Durham, Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina, and it's a young African-American girl who's dating a white boy, and she says they're both 21 years old. She loves him, he loves her, but she feels he has a racist attitude, and she's trying to address that with him, and he is denying it. And she met his mother and father, and she feels his mother and father's in their late 50s, and she feels his mother and father have racist attitudes, that he is, that they're giving him those signals. And she feels if he loves her, why do he have racist attitudes? Things that make her go, hmm.
And I think you answered your question also. You answered your question in what you put down. His racial feelings, his ideas about the world are formed through his environment. And so it's no surprise to me that you feel like his mother and father have the same views, because that's where he probably grew them and learned about them, probably did a really good job of addressing that racism in that way that you're feeling now. So what he feels, he doesn't understand it in the same context that you are, and just understand this, he never will. He will never understand it as a white person, what we as African Americans go through. And you have to first settle that. Are you okay with that? Are you okay that the cultural context in which you bring into this relationship, he will never be able to understand or identify with? And take that as your first question to yourself about where this relationship is going. The second thing is, I would really have you have a ongoing conversation about what racism and what that act has done to you as a person, to you as a part of a people. Understanding or getting to understand his point of view of what he knows about racism, what he knows about the effects of it. And also being mindful and telling that you're going to be mindful of the conversations that you have in which you feel a bit of that racism playing out in that conversation, right? And hopefully he'll be okay with that. So that means that when he says something that you feel it has racial overtones, that you're going to stop that conversation and say, okay, let's stop the conversation right here and let me explain to you why I'm feeling this way. So that he can get to understand, because he actually may not even be aware of some of the things that he is doing in the relationship that is causing the friction, and that's his confusion, because he hasn't been informed, he hasn't lived your life, he hasn't lived those experiences. And then I would also encourage him to also broaden the understanding, because there are a lot, like this is 2021. There are so many other vehicles in which he can learn. If he is interested in being with you, then this is something that is going to be with you for as long as your relationship with him is. So it's up to him to be willing to learn more about racism, more about how white people are racist, and understand what that looks like. So he can take a course. He can go online and sign up and take a course that talks about Black history, that talks about white privilege, so that he can understand it from your point of view. But just understand also, like I said at the beginning, that you guys can be in a wonderful, loving relationship, and you guys can work out your differences, but they will just be a gap in your cultural understanding of who you are as a person and who your people are and his. I hope that was helpful. Anonymous. Okay, great.
Another anonymous from New York, New York. This question is a young man, 19 years old. He's been dating another young man since they were 15. Now at 19, this young man is starting to be interested. It's a gay relationship. Mm-hmm. This other young man is interested in this other young man seems to be interested in this other young woman. They would these two, according to what he's saying here, they were supposed to be getting married. now this other young man, his lover, I guess, he is interested now in seeing this young female. He questioned him about it. He said it's nothing. He just want to go to parties and dance, and he wants to just feel, you know, different parties, so he wants to hang out with her. But he feels that he's leaving the idea of marrying him, and he wants to understand what can he do to bring him back into the relationship, mm-hmm. in which they were planning for marriage and et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it possible, he's saying, that his friend is turning straight, but his friend comes back to him, and so he doesn't understand, you know, how to, mm-hmm. he loves him a lot, and it's causing him a lot of depression, and he wants to know how can he deal with it.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing this. This is really a difficult, I think, situation for you to be in when you have, there doesn't seem to be an equal investment in your relationship. And so you seem to be willing to go on and take that next step, and this individual is not. And so giving you opportunity to understand a couple of things, right? The both of you are very young. And at this young age, the idea of getting married is a commitment that while you may think you are ready for, and I say think because you don't know, at the age of 19, you don't know everything that you will know, right? And you're still figuring things out. And especially as males, you know, you're still figuring things out. You're still figuring yourself out and figuring out him. And so at that time, getting together and trying to figure it out each other and also at the same time figure out each other separately is really taxing on the relationship. And so his interest in this other person, I really would not focus on the fact that the person is a woman. It's another person that he's interested in, whether it was a male or whether it is, but maybe about his own apprehension to where this relationship is going. He may not be ready for it. And that is something that you're going to have to have a conversation about to find out what is going on in relationship with you, how he feels about you, and how he feels about the two of you moving on and taking this next step of marriage. What is his plans for the future? And are you a part of that future? And being okay with whatever his response is. And then doing the me work, which means that if right now he's going in a direction that does not include you, there really is very little that you can do about it. And then you now have to focus on yourself, making sure that you are having that support to help you get through this, to help you re-identify yourself, to help you move past it, to help you deal with all that you need to deal with as you let go of this relationship and really move on and be healthy, because you don't want to go on to another relationship when you're not over this relationship. So you have to do the work that's going to be really hard and have that support with you. If at the end of the day you realize that the decisions that he's making is really about him planning a life that does not include you. And so right now I would really have that honest conversation with him, whether you guys just go away and just say, listen, we just need to talk and make sure that we're on the same page. But other thing, too, is that you also have to, I know that this is really hard, but you have to understand that it really is better that you figure this out now and that he is honest and open about his feelings and his expectations and what he wants for himself rather than going into the marriage and finding out later. So as painful as this process might be, as painful as this process will probably be, it is really to your best interest and to his best that you have this honest conversation about the two of you and your future together, and that you encourage him to be honest about his feelings
what he's feeling, what he's thinking, how he his feelings towards you, and what he wants to do with his future.
Great.
I hope that was helpful.
You got a lot of anonymous tonight. Another anonymous. This lady is from Louisiana, and she's saying that she's a white female. She was married to a white male, and they got divorced. She has a African-American female friend for 15 years. They've been extremely friendly between her husband, her white husband, and her husband were friends before they were friends, but when they got married, they both became good friends. Now she's divorced from the white husband, and she's dating a black male. Her friend seems to be all of her black female friends, whether it's her coworkers or, you know, females she know, you know, just by general conversation. But this particular female that she's friend with for 15 years, who she confided a lot of things into, she felt that that was one person that would be her best friend and her greatest supporter. She's not finding the support for her now that she's dating this black male, and she wants to know, thing that make her go, is why black females feel so threatened or angry when a white female dates a black male. She don't understand what the problem is.
Ooh, this is another heavy one. So I hope you were listening to the conversation that I had before this one about the context, right? So the context for you as a white woman is totally different than the context for us as black women. Our history, our way of looking at things are totally different because we're looking through our experiences, both the past of what we may have ourselves have experienced or our culture or our community has experienced. And so we're going to be looking at this from a totally different lens, the majority of time. Now, you will have some black women and some black men who are okay with biracial relationships. But you will have some black women and black men and white men who are not okay with biracial relationships. That's just the way our world is. So you're going to face that. So understanding that perspective is going to be different and respecting that perspective is going to be different is your starting point. And understanding that is not based on anything specific to you, but it is a perpetuation of things that have happened to our culture, within our culture, in which we have been made to feel that black men and our black women choose to go to date a white woman or a white man as a way of saying to us that we are not good enough for you to date and to marry and to start a family with. And sometimes, even as crazy as this might seem to you from the outside looking in, there are times in which a conversation just helps to solidify that idea, because the black man will say, I don't date black women because X, Y, and Z. And I find that white women are easier to date. And so when you have, you're stuck in the middle, but when you have these tensions between us as a culture, between us as a people, you're going to have some women who are still feeling that pain of that representing a rejection of them as black women. And then you also have to take in consideration that there are not a lot of the availability of males, black males, is limited within our community. There are not a lot of black males because, unfortunately, some of them are being killed by police officers. Some of them are being wrongly accused and are incarcerated. So there are a lot of different layers to also put into that tension when we look at a white person dating a black person. And I hope that gives you a little bit of process and helps you to see things a little bit in the view of a Black woman.
Oh, great decision. Coach Morrell, you're at that point right now of the ending of the show, and you might want to give your general review ideas. Just round everything up.
Yes. Wow. Yeah, this conversation must continue, and it's always a pleasure of serving so many in humanity. Just to be able to have great conversations, challenging conversations, and what we also call necessary conversations, so that we can bring healing, so that we can go from optimization to maximization. And I want, with that in mind, thank you for all of those who called in, for those that sent texts. Thank you for listening in. Please share this information. I'll be also sharing it out on Facebook and my different social media and my groups. And but Sharon, I want to say thank you. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your heart, passion, your information, your insight. You had some really challenging questions, but I believe that you took your time with it. You put yourself in their shoe, and you gave them great advice. And I'll say something that I said at the top. We are not counselors. We're not counseling you. We are giving you scenarios. We hope that you would continue to speak for those that need professional counseling in relationships, in your finances, and just different areas of life. Wherever you are on the spectrum of relationships, the physical environment, your friends, life balance, education, spirituality, emotional health, physical, family, fun, leisure, finance, and your career. Please continue to surround yourself with positive people and continue to tap into this resource. If you want coaching, if you want your temperament done or anything like that, if you want to become a best-selling author in 3 to 5 months or 4 to 5 months, if you want to be a workshop developer, facilitator, definitely reach out to us. You want to parent better. My God, you have Sharon on this line, Sharon Nielsen. My goodness. And child developer extraordinaire, you also have myself. We can help you. Partner with us. And please take a look at my website. By next week, I should have the information for the network. You can become part of our network where we can help you with mentoring and coaching, and we can help increase your business, your ministry, and your personal life. 862-205-9077. And take a look on our website. That is www.morrell. It begins with M as in Morrell, O-R-E-A-L-E, Brown, INC.com. So thank you once again, Dr. Ron. Thank you for our audience. And please stay tuned and please share. Share what is happening. This is good news. It's great news. It's uplifting news. It's inspiring news to help you go from optimization to maximization. Have a great one. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Come on, everybody. Put your hands together. It's got to get better. All over the world, listen to these words. People come.
People come.
People go.
People go.
Your life has been out of control.
Out of control.
You're confused. But don't worry.
Your song, it will get better.
It's gotta get
better. It will get better.
It's gonna be
better. It will get better.
Cause
God is in
control, y'all.
Keep